Welcome to Pickle Me This, the officially unofficial podcast for Rick and Morty on Cartoon Network's Adult Swim. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm Aaron.
You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Today we're covering Season 2, Episode 7, Big Trouble in Little Sanchez. Here's Aaron with the recap.
Vampires are real, and they stalk the halls of Harry Herbson High, preying upon innocent lunch ladies. There's only one solution, Rick injecting his mind into a teenage clone of himself to battle the undead side by side with Summer and Morty. Meanwhile, Rick ships Beth and Jerry off to Nuptia 4, a planet to boast a 100% success rate in saving marriages with their innovative counseling and therapy services. Unfortunately for the counselors of Nuptia 4, Beth and Jerry don't have a marriage. They have a hellish, codependent, psycho-sadomasochistic terror alliance, which can be neither saved nor fully destroyed. So, Jim, Big Trouble Little Sanchez, what you think?
I like this episode. I think probably the strongest part of it is the Nuptia 4 Beth and Jerry plot. Tiny Rick is fun, though. Tiny Rick is... It has a scene at the end where Rick goes and destroys his own clones that I really love, just for the graphic nature of it. And, you know, both from the violence perspective and also, was it surprising to you that even on the Blu-ray, his dick is blurred out?
I don't know if surprise is the word I would use because
disappointed. I was disappointed.
You want to see his geriatric dick flipping around?
Yeah.
Flopping
around? Why not?
Flipping? Flopping. Mid-flop.
I mean, it's not the worst thing that I would have seen on Rick and Morty. I mean, certain of it.
Yeah. I mean, it's less horrifying than him bisecting his own skull in a clone tank. But they draw the line at animated dicks.
I don't know why, but
unless they're alien trees that look like dicks.
Right.
There's tons of those.
Yeah. But yeah, I mostly like this episode. How about you?
I have to take a confession here. This is my personal least favorite episode of Rick and Morty.
There has to be one. You have to have a
and
least favorite.
And it's not bad because the thing is, like, I keep wrestling in my mind what it is I don't like about it because I actually love the B plot. If it is in fact the B plot, maybe that's the problem. Is I think it's the B plot. It's actually the A plot. I think that is brilliant and it's got some of my favorite like bits of animation and character, like Jerry's image or whatever they call it, the worm Jerry offering his ass up to real to Jerry Prime fucking slays me every single time.
Nobody's doing that.
Nobody's doing that. And I love Morty's get your shit together speech. Mm-hmm. Like that's a big favorite around my household, and it's a brilliant piece of writing. And the comedy timing of Morty just coming in and adding another one. But I don't know. There's something about, like you said, that Tiny Rick is fun, but I don't know because it feels to me like it's just hitting the Rick is miserable, but he can't talk about it. This is wubba wubba, wubba lubba dub dub, wit large, you know, like, or writ large, or repeat it again. And I don't know. That's.
Yeah. I mean, I think they're trying to get to some core of like, what's the difference between, you know, happy kids and miserable adults, essentially, or like, what makes a happy child turn into a miserable adult?
Or maybe that's the other thing is that, like, is that the story they want to tell? Because, like, I feel like this is just a story, a continuation of Grandpa Rick is actually a really tortured soul, and he kind of always wants to die, and he numbs himself with alcohol and all these other drugs and experiences.
Yeah.
But they also make it like, oh, it's not that. It's just that he's an old man trapped in a teenage body, and, like, but that's different.
It's a little
stories.
Bit of both, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the things that have happened to Rick over his life have turned him into old Rick. And now that he's Tiny Rick, young Rick, he has shoved all of the things that make him Rick to sort of the back of his mind. Mm-hmm. Which I like. That's not my view of teenagers. My view of why teenagers are just like so full of life and you know vigor and stuff is because they're fucking young.
Yeah.
They haven't had experiences that have turned them into old Rick yet.
Yeah.
Right, it's not like, oh well, they're just repressing all those thoughts and putting them in the back of their head. No, they're just those thoughts aren't on their mind because they don't have the experience to understand that those thoughts should even exist. So, like, I don't know that I agree with, like, some of the stuff that the episode is trying to say about, like, children and their mental state. But I don't know. I think it's fun.
There's a slight inversion of the, you know, like, oh, if you could go back with all your skills and experiences, you'd just crush high school because,
yeah,
you know, maybe that's not the case. And then the other thing is, like, most Rick and Morty episodes are damn near 10 for 10, 9.5 out of 10.
Yeah.
That, like, when I get to, like, a 7... You know, it's like it's the one that bums me out every time I'm in like an Adult Swim marathon, and oh god, it's fucking Tiny Rick. But all in all, it's a great episode. It also has one of my favorite stingers, like the Coach Feratu, the vampire, like where he's just doing like, you know, straight up vampire pastiche, and then like, wait, what? What was his name? And he turns into like the Ryan Ridley voice. That I think is super funny, and him like, you know, is it just am I being an asshole here or no? And then he goes right back to tearing the throat out of the girl. It's good. So like I said, you got a plus B plot, and then, you know, whatever. We should maybe move on to what we think about this episode. Do you want to talk about marriage counseling or Ricky the Vampire Slayer?
Let's get Tiny Rick out of the way.
Okay.
Because I think we're both itching to talk more about the marriage counseling
stuff.
Does
it bother you that Rick has, like, people go preternaturally gray. Or preternaturally gray?
Okay,
preternaturally is almost like...
It's like, oh my god, there's no gray of that color,
like,
in the universe.
Elves out of Mirkwood are preternaturally right. gray. But people do go gray and early in life, but I guess it's weird to me that a child Rick would be gray. Is that like canon? Or is this some kind of like, he's working with old man DNA, so it inherits some of the old man attributes? Is that some of the reasons it bothers me?
Yeah, it's a really confusing thing because I think everybody knows that he's an old man.
Mm-hmm.
Like, certainly doesn't Principal Vagina knows.
Right.
So that implies to me that the kids know, and that, like, the gray hair is just part and parcel with that.
He also doesn't look like I think this is the subconscious things that are bothering me. He doesn't look like a literally translated, like, 14 to 16-year-old Rick. Like,
no.
He's very beefy. He suddenly doesn't have a neck. Like, his proportions are off. Like, I feel like if he just literally looked like a teenage Rick, maybe that would... Because I buy him being the, you know...
How do you make Rick look teenage? Just take the line out from under his eyes or something?
Give him some, like, interesting facial hair. Maybe, like, give him a slightly cooler version of his haircut.
You might confuse that with evil Rick, though, if it's the wrong facial hair.
Like leave it long on top and give him kind of a fade. So it, like, looks like he's actually... But part of the reason that Rick is cool in high school is because he doesn't give a fuck. He takes that attitude back. And, you know, honestly, being cool is 90% just holding the frame of not giving a fuck against all comers, and Rick does that with the plum. So, like, it totally makes sense that all the kids like him. It's just, I don't know, there's like a lot of aspects. I do like the energy, like, that, you know, you've essentially got same kind of irreverent, not giving a fuck Rick, but he's got some kind of like youthful energy and drive to him.
Yeah, that's the thing that makes me say Tiny Rick is fun. It's just because, you know, he seems like the kind of guy who... You look at Rick, and he can party all night.
Mm-hmm.
How long can Tiny Rick party?
Sure, yeah. He doesn't have
He's going to party all semester.
Although I wonder how much of, like, Rick is natural at this point. How much has he, you know, like, does he have the body of a 70-year-old, or is it, like, half cybernetic? Does he got adrenal implants?
I mean, it's a clone. It's a clone of him, so probably just human body, I'd imagine.
Yeah, he got Arnold Schwarzenegger ripped less than a season ago, and then that's Christian Baling, and you can only do that a couple of times before it's like switching universes.
Yeah, come on, Christian, get
miles on it.
Get young. We've seen you get fat. We've seen you get skinny.
Yeah.
Get young.
Yeah, I want you to essentially remake. What was that fucking, was it Rising Sun? That was a Christian Bale's first movie where he was like a POW in Japanese. Yeah, go back and do that.
Yeah,
de-age yourself. Really apply yourself. And I, you know, like I said, there's a lot of things I really like. The get your shit together speech is inspired. I love when they plug him into Elliot Smith and he is both giving complicated and precise scientific instructions while he's having an existential crisis.
Uh-huh.
And it's just all blended together. And it's like, that's really fucking hard to do. Like giving, like, you know, like if I'm Justin Roiland and I'm in the booth and I'm trying to do these hairpin turns of dialogue, like, how the hell does he keep up with it?
Am I going to be an internet pariah if I say I have no fucking idea who Elliot Smith is?
I had to look it up myself. I don't know. Like, if Radiohead's too mainstream,
you listen to Elliot Smith.
Do you go to Elliot? I don't know. He seemed like one of those guys who burned out bright.
Yeah.
Because like I was reading his Wikipedia, it's like, oh, this is going to be one of those guys falling into drug addiction. He got stabbed to death.
Stabbed to death?
Which probably is related to his rampant drug addiction and the people he hung out with. And
wow. But this was like 2003, because I looked him up too.
How did I miss him
in 2003?
Like, essentially a new age folk singer get stabbed to death and I completely missed it.
I don't know, man.
I don't know either. But he's the tonic you need to bring your old ass self out of your young ass body. And then the smooth, like, you know, I love his like nudity and the discomfort. Like, it's great because you remember Morty's reaction to him being naked in the M. Night Shyamalan's episode. Yeah. And now Morty's kind of like, he's not cool with it, but this is something he's seen before, where Summer is giving that Morty performance the entire time.
Yeah, I love it.
I like that attention to detail. I also like him as immediately just like, well, this really puts a damper on Project Phoenix.
It's so good. And he takes an axe to all the clones.
Yeah. No thoughts about his own humanity. No, I love it. Like, just now, this is not the fallback I thought it would be. Smack, smack.
I got a question for you.
Yeah, yeah.
The end of this episode, because Summer's reputation in this episode, I think, is destroyed.
It goes through an arc.
Yeah, like she becomes super popular and super desirable, but only because of her proximity to Tiny Rick,
right?
Who is actually the popular one.
Which is, well, how a lot of fucking high school works.
Absolutely. And then she rats him out and gets him expelled, and then he blows up her spot in front of everyone. Is her reputation just destroyed from here on out at school? Because I don't think that's rectified at the end. I think she's just going to be a pariah now at school.
It seems that's the way it's poised. Maybe we can talk more about it in Dimension BM-77.
Okay.
Yeah, we talk about like high school being like that. And maybe that's the other thing, finally, before I put all my problems with this episode to bed, is like Rick gives a very clear and concise, like at the beginning where Summer's like, I know Grandpa Rick, why don't you take this serum and turn yourself young and go battle vampires, is like, ah, oh, pretty specific pitch, Summer. I have reverse ask. Why in the fuck would I ever do that? And he just outlines like how utterly, like, if you're not woke as a teenager to how utterly pointless high school is, that is its own kind of like Matrix blue pill hell. But if you are aware of it, it's like especially bad. Mm-hmm. And then the justification for Rick showing up is like, well, I just got bored and I thought about blowing, and I just decided to reverse course, which that's not out of Rick's character, but it's, you know, we kind of take the temperature of like Rick caring about his family, but like this almost puts its thumb way on the scale, because holy shit, it implies that he got bored, he got needy, he wanted to hang out with his family, and like despite all these things that are bad ideas for doing this, he does it anyway so we can hang out. And it was like later that morning too.
Oh yeah, no, I think the last two episodes actually have done a ton to cement how strongly connected to his grandkids Rick is.
Like, how does
because they're like going hopping dimensions to go see Ball Fondler movies and like
that's true.
You know, there's a lot of stuff where,
but
like,
is that like taking
Summer
him to the
and
mall?
Morty,
like, is that like taking him downtown to the mall for Rick? Like, that's I don't know if that's an extraordinary, but he's putting in the time.
But it's way better than he was doing a season ago.
Sure,
you know, he hardly had any relationship with Summer at all. Now he's hanging out with Summer and Morty constantly.
Yeah.
Before we move on to the B plot, maybe if I were to kind of come to your perspective here about not liking this A plot, the vampire stuff feels weird. It just sort of feels out of place in the Rick and Morty verse. It's typically much more sci-fi and alien based than it is this kind of fantasy stuff. Vampires just don't feel right in Rick and Morty to me.
I thought you're right, but I felt like they did a lot of, you're making me defend the part of the episode I hate, Jim. This is not my contract, but I felt like they did a lot of, propping up of that, where Rick's like, yeah, vampires are real. We've known for hundreds of years. Look at all the literature. Look at all the things. And they're like, I can't believe that. Like, what are we going to do? And he's like, we're going to live our lives until we're dead. Possibly by vampire, but more probably by heart disease or auto accident. It kind of reminds me a little bit of like the idea that there are terrorists in the world that want, broadly speaking, us dead. But the amount of shit lost to that, as opposed to, you know, safe driving on highways, preventable deaths due to mental illness and drug abuse and et cetera, like, is way out of line. So I kind of like the drive-by commentary about, like, vampires being a stand-in for the weird shit that CNN loves to tell you that you didn't know about. Oh, my God, it kills dozens every year, and who gives a fuck?
Gotcha.
Like, you know, like the vampire's a blue ring octopus. Did you know there's blue ring octopuses? They're so small you can't even see them, and they're deadly lethal, and there's no antidote? Mm-hmm. Well, they are, and they're in Australia.
Brain-eating amoebas.
Brain-eating amoebas, yeah. You fucking neti potting in Mississippi, and suddenly you got something literally eating your brain, and it's killed a half a dozen people. Did you know about that?
Right.
Next time you go to fucking irrigate your sinus, you better boil that goddamn water. Yeah. So now what'll be interesting is if they ever do that, like, in a larger myth, like, you know, like, it'd be funny if, like, you know, obviously werewolves and mummies aren't real, but, like, vampires are a thing.
Okay.
You know, because, sure. Like, it's like, if someone has thought of a monster, can you just hand wave away and say, well, of course, like, they're, you know.
I mean, it seems like it, yeah.
Yeah.
If we have hundreds of years of history of writing about it, yeah.
Sure. You know, like, if you go parts of Asia, they got jumping ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
You got fire demons in the Middle East, like,
you
just
got wendigos,
all real.
You got, yeah, all kinds of shit.
Yeah, you got the fucking Loch Ness monster.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably just a plesiosaur. Can we talk about marriage counseling now?
Please.
Nuptia 4. It's a great concept that you got this planet that has 100% success rate. And, like, I can see how this therapy would be beneficial, because, like, some of the couples counseling that I've been a party to and have read about, it involves, like, in a safe way, talking about, like, the worst, like, you know, when you think of your mate at their worst, like, what is your perception and versus the bad, and, like, see them, like, when you're idolizing them, when you're vilifying them, neither of those is the actual person. Mm-hmm. Their stuff is, like, in the middle. Maybe it's on one side or the other. Like, this is all very healthy. And to actually realize that, to see, like, this hulking monster that Beth is and this subservient worm that Jerry is, I think it's funny. And then the fact that they're, like, an unbeatable team, It kind of... This episode does a lot to, like, peel back the curtain and show, like, what is the thing that keeps Beth and Jerry together is because they are, like, not just exciting, but, like, there's some kind of danger to them. Like, in the proper situation, they could found a cult and, like, take over the world.
Huh. I was searching. I was looking at this episode going, okay, they clearly want me to understand that there is something about them that makes them a weird kind of power couple.
Yeah.
But I never quite got the hook they were going for.
But it is like something that, like, not their marriage is so bad. And so they have a 100% marriage saving rate. I kind of played with that in my episode synopsis, that they don't actually have a marriage. It's some kind of unholy thing. It's like, you know, it's the part in the, you know, the movie where the scientist is looking at a brain tissue in a microscope and, like, my God, you've put a tiger shark DNA with a human brain cell, you bastards. Like, it's not a shark. It's not a person. It's a terrifying combination of the two. And that's what it feels like they're going for. Their marriage, that it is exceptional, and that intense passion and the up and downs of it is something that they're kind of addicted to, because if they could ever harness it, they could do terrible, great things with it.
Yeah, and they've kind of played with this idea in previous episodes where, you know, you'll see every once in a while Beth coming in to save Jerry, like, sure. In the Meeseeks episode, she gives him the confidence he needs to get out of that situation. Then there's stuff like... you know, her veterinarian coworker,
right.
Beth, who's trying to assault her in the Cronenberg episode, Jerry comes in and kills that guy. So, like, there are moments where they each need each other in a weird way.
Yeah.
And that the two of them being who they are, like, it's Jerry's neurosis that leads him to being there in that moment when Beth needs him. Right. And there's a sort of sick symbiosis there.
Yeah, like, if Beth can dig deep enough and find, like, the supportive, nurturing, you know, empathetic person that she is in, like, the goddess persona, then Jerry you know, could be, and oh, but also, and if Jerry were actually a stand-up guy and was there when Beth needed, instead of like locking himself in their car when she's being menaced by some crazy person with a broken bottle, then she would. It's like, it's one of those, you know, they call it, like, there's virtuous cycles where, like, you have positive qualities that keep raising things up, and then the corresponding is what people more are familiar with, the vicious cycle, where it's like, you know, random, or not random, but repeated negative interactions just dragging the relationship down and down and down. And I don't know. There's I just love the line where it's like, you know, they're in the middle of all this carnage that their mythological projections of themselves have caused. And the therapist just goes off on them about, like, you guys should have never been married, should never stay together. Like, he just tells them, like, what is, like, scientifically and with authority, how bad their marriage is. And Beth is just dismissive, like, well, this is just bad couples therapy. I don't know. I love it. And then there's this also this kind of, like, moment of clarity Beth has where, you know, Jerry's found this perfect hiding place. And she's like, it's not that this is a bad strategy. This is your best strategy for survival. If I join you in here, then we'll both die. If I drag you out of your comfort zone and try to commando this, then we'll probably both die. Maybe we have to go our separate parts. And that, I don't know, this, like, will they, won't they divorce thing is a big part of the engine of Rick and Morty. And I like it. And this kind of, like, next level couples therapy was a great way to visualize it.
It does have me asking the question if people would be better off or worse off if we had these machines, if we could see accurately what people thought of us at any given moment.
I think the world would be a better place if more people formally put thought into their self and their relationships, because most people just kind of wing it. You know?
Yeah, I think it would, not only would it be, I think, overall helpful for people to know what other people thought of them, but for that person to understand what they thought of other people too.
Right.
Because a lot of the times it's hard to even know how you feel about somebody else.
Yeah. And you can tell, like, I know Dan talks about this a lot on Harmontown publicly, his journey through therapy. And there's a lot of, like, they touch on a lot of things. Like, a lot of times you hear therapists say that the opposite of crazy is crazy, which is reflected in Jerry. Like, you know, Jerry as the worm obviously is a dysfunctional way to be, but Jerry as a self-aggrandizing, pompous ass is and I love how there's, like, all three versions of Jerry, like the worm Jerry, the commando Jerry, and the Jerry's just standing around jerking himself off are all in the background of this epic battle going on at the whole time.
Yeah, it's great.
But there's a lot of, like, yeah, like, you know, shit, if there's couple, I just wonder, it's like, you know, it's like, if there's couples that, like, watch this and be like, Jesus Christ, we see ourselves in Beth and Jerry, it's like, you know, to your point, if this episode motivates people to go and try couples therapy, it's probably a good thing, because, you know, what else are you going to do?
Must have been so much fun, but also so much damn work to animate this episode. Because, like, just coming up with the creature designs had to be so much fun. Like, what are we going to make the worst version of Jerry look like?
Yeah. And, like I said, Chris Parnell's performance of him as the worm, him as Jerry being disgusted by himself as the worm. The sound, like, the gelatinous shaking of his butt cheeks is so fucking good. And then, like, all these episodes around Beth and Jerry kind of take this emotional roller coaster where you see the terrifying highs and the completely devastating lows. And then they, like, most, you know, TGIF comedies of the 80s and 90s would leave it at the moment of triumph where they've triumphed and they've saved each other. But this show does a little bit more. It's like, you know, when Jerry says, when it comes to your ego, I'm Stephen fucking Hawkinson. And it's like, there's a little bit of a sour note because Beth wants to be happy and she wants to be the better person. She wants to be like, you know, all in all, this is a big, but you can tell it sticks in her craw.
And I think it's a fairly accurate portrayal of people. Like, you don't have these moments that just change you forever. You got to kind of reflect on the moments. You got to have a series of moments. You got to have, you know, a lot of work goes into changing who you are, not just, well, this thing happened to me and now I'm a different person. That doesn't often happen.
Yeah. And there's a lot of also, like, the thing you hate about your partner might be the things you value if you lose them. Like, there's a little bit of that in the alien queen version of Beth saying, "Fool, do you not see? Do you not know the value of this person's worship and his subservience?" Mm-hmm. And you know, the sting that when she says, "The reason I'm the strongest and smartest being in the galaxy is because that's how much stronger and more capable Jerry thinks of you than you actually are." Because Beth is, yeah, I mean, she's Rick's child and she's smart. She's got a lot of potential, but there's a little bit of like a rebuke that, like, you know, are you, is Jerry actually holding you back, or is he your excuse for not becoming your version of the goddess?
Hmm. Or and, is a little bit of both.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe. One of my favorite lines is early on in this episode when they're talking about going to therapy and they suggest just seeing a marriage counselor, and Rick's like, "Earth therapy? Come on, that's like asking a horse to fix a merry-go-round." Try his best, but mostly just get horrified. Really fucking funny. And I had to sit there and think about that line for a second.
It's a multidimensional joke,
it
too.
It really is.
Like, you unpack it. Like, what is a merry-go-round?
Uh-huh. Oh, it's got these horses on it. Hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's trying to diagnose this thing that is showing itself a weird reflection of itself. And
but
it's
like
just
grotesque and funhouse.
Right. Yeah. No, it's such a good joke.
Garish. Yeah. It's great.
And I bet that's the kind of thing that just, like, I don't know, Dan rattled off in the writer's room and was just like,
sure.
Oh, yeah. No, it makes perfect sense. Right.
Sometimes I think, like, because I, you know, I listen to Harmontown enough to see him kind of just like riff off. And like, that's one of the pleasures of being a Harmontown fan is like a lot of stuff, percolates out into Rick and Morty. But it's like, is his mind like the sun? Like, you hear that like a photon is generated like 10,000 years before it's escaping. So it's like when shit he just blurts out, has that been ricocheting and attack? And like all these fragments of like sentence structure and jokes and layers have just been bouncing around. And when like, oh, it's like a horse trying to diagnose a merry-go-round, it comes out. It's like, what the fuck? Like, yeah, it's been bouncing around in there for 10,000 years.
Let me out. Let me out. This is not a dance. I'm begging for help. I'm screaming for help. Please come let me out.
The garage.
Yeah!
Yeah! Awesome.
Okay, that last part was really weird.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
House of the Dragon Season 2 is coming up sooner than you think. And to get us all back in that Leal state of mind, Aaron and I have teamed up with Maester Anthony to bring you coordinated coverage, new and old. For the next 10 weeks leading up to Season 2, Maester Anthony will be releasing an episode of his Season 1 coverage on the Hot D podcast. He originally recorded and released it exclusively on his Double Dragon podcast, so while it's retro coverage, it's almost certainly new to you.
In addition, each Friday, Jim and I will be reading the relevant sections of George Martin's Targaryen history book, Fire and Blood, so that we can compare and contrast it to that week's episode of Hot D Season 1. So grab a copy of Fire and Blood and read along with us if you're so inclined. Just don't read ahead unless you enjoy spoilers.
If that's not enough to satisfy your craving for fantasy entertainment, well, you're in luck. We recently watched King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, which is Guy Ritchie's uniquely stylish and anachronistic riff on the King Arthur legend. Yes, Guy Ritchie took on the most famous of all English legends, and did it with huge ambitions. Sadly, or perhaps thankfully, depending on your tastes, his ambitions were cut short by meager audience interest. Join us for the podcast this Tuesday as we discuss why that might have been and whether this retelling is any good.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. And now this is the point in which we pull out our portal guns, we tune them to Dimension BM-77, and access behind-the-scenes details, trivia, potential spoilers for future episodes.
You're going to blur that portal gun, right?
Am I going to what
it? You can't just whip out a portal gun and not have it blurred.
You can't have a 43-year-old portal gun you're waving around on a podcast, you know. Potentially there's a video version of this. Children could be horrified. What do you got for a portal gun
There's a Gravity Falls character in this episode. We've talked a little bit about the tie-ins that they've sometimes done. Mm-hmm. with shit that's been flying out of portals in the past. There's a character, Bill Cipher, on one of the scanning screens in this episode.
Right, as Jerry puts on his helmet.
Yep. That's the one piece of trivia I got. I listened to this commentary. I wrote down nothing from the commentary.
Huh.
I enjoyed the commentary. It was a good listen, but nothing felt like really pertinent to talk about.
Well, it's funny because there's another Gravity Falls reference, which Toby Matthews, which is kind of the dream boat that Summer's fixated on, is played by Alex Hirsch, who's also a voice actor in Gravity Falls.
He's like the creator of Gravity Falls, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. But I'm not as familiar with that show as I am like Adventure Time. There's also a lot of, I thought, stepping away from the trivia bit, the fact that, like, I don't like the Tiny Rick episode, but Tiny Rick is what probably led to Pickle Rick, which is one of my favorite episodes.
Really?
Like, the whole cadence of, like, I'm Tiny Rick, and, like, with the Pickle Rick, like, that's that's the birth of that. I don't know. What
there
you
are
would
a lot
that?
Of elements, because last episode, they built those, like, mech suits, and I felt very much like that was part of the Pickle Rick stuff.
Yeah, you're not wrong. And he also, his explanation, if you recall how he got into like that, he was essentially bored. Well, that was his, I guess, cover story. He was bored and he did this as a challenge.
He didn't want to do therapy is what it really was.
Right. But I don't know. Maybe he was escaping some other, like his taxes were due that day. So he's like, oh, fuck, I'm just going to make myself young and go fuck around in high school.
Could be.
But I also like some of the behind the scenes writing stuff where, like, I got this idea that, like, it sounds like that Dan is, like, more than anyone, the guardian of what he thinks Rick and Morty, or, like, the Rick and Morty's, like, reputation, because there's, like, a discussion about with Ryan and how he wanted, like, some of these visuals that when the aliens are plugged in and they're having their minds read, like, he was wanting this stuff, like, to see a giant hen that's hen-pecking their husband or something like that, because he thought that would be funny as a contrast to then you get to Rick or to Jerry putting a helmet on and, like, Beth is a fucking xenomorph alien queen ass ripper. So it's like, oh my God, it would visually tell the story of how much worse their relationship is. And, you know, Dan, like, instantly goes back into the argument. It's like, well, don't you think that'd be confusing? And I'm like, okay, where is he going with this? But then he goes, why would, like, an alien from Jupiter be using human metaphors like henpecking?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, damn, like, I don't know how many people would follow that line of logic, but it's almost like I know some fucker.
Well, everyone on the internet.
Some fucker on Reddit's going to be like, what's this Venetian doing with the henpecking metal? And he's already on it because he's been in the trenches with Community and all this other shit. He's like, nah, I'm not going down there. I thought that was funny. Also, that the idea that the writing room, as they're developing these plots, that they are guilty of, like, trying to find a thematic connection between the two when they don't need to be there. And it's like, that can be really harmful, that this is one of the episodes they realize that, like, there's no need to do that. Like, the principal reason to have an A and B plot is just so you can yada yada through the boring parts of timelines.
Sure.
Like, not every single thing is act wham, bam, blam. And it would feel very weird pacing wise if the plot unfolded like that, which is like, because that's like a, you know, how a child tells a story, then this thing happens, then this thing happens, then this thing happens, and like doing an A, B, even C allows you to kind of shuffle the focus around and build tension, and that, like, if you have a thematic connection, great, if you discover it along the way, but, like, not to try to force it or not to and there's even I think that they said that in the script, right? Like, when Rick picks up Beth and Jerry, and Jerry makes something about, like, oh, sounds like we were on theme, and Rick's like, is that because you just said it? I thought that was some kind of interesting.
Yeah, I will say some of the most satisfying media I've consumed, though, does have themes that tie it all together.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Like, I really appreciate when a television show takes an episode to explore a theme.
Mm-hmm. But it's not necessary, and if you try to force it, so anything that's not necessary means it's a cherry on top. So, like, everyone loves cherries on top, but a bowl full of cherries, that's a cherry fiasco.
which is a delicious dessert.
It is. Do you know, I also like their discussion about how they almost didn't go down the path of having Beth be the goddess because it's Deus Ex, it's literally God from the machine.
But
Deus
that's
Ex
what makes
Machina.
It work.
But that's
at the same
also,
time, yeah.
Right, that, like, well, it's this is another thing that, like, Dan talks about in comedy, like the concept of a hat on a hat. Like, if you have a character with a funny hat, sometimes the temptation is, oh, put an even funnier hat on it, because that's And that's hack. But sometimes you can have an elaborately constructed series, a whole scaffolding of hats that pushes through that. And like the fact that this is a projection of a projection of a projection. And that's the point that like that they leaned into it and it works. I thought that was pretty funny or pretty interesting. And then the final thing that I got from the commentary was that they originally designed the Worm Jerry to have like a dog, like Snowball had the dog butthole. It's just like the little asterisk.
Right.
And stands for the one thing they pushed back on this show. And you think about all the stuff we've talked about so far.
Sure.
You know, Rick's teenage daughter being some sex slave and a high school teacher's fantasy. Mm-hmm. Like all the stuff that Standards and Practice is like, don't give a shit about. The Worm having an exploitable butthole.
Yeah, it's amazing.
When he's offering himself for butt sex, like, well, now listen.
We don't know for sure that's that thing's butt.
There's an implication that I don't know there. That I like here that there might be some butt stuff going on.
Right.
Like, yeah, I thought that's like, what? I mean, it's got to be even funnier in context. Like, can you imagine, like, you're the producer of the show and you know what you've gotten away with, and you get a note from Standards and Practice like, what the fuck did the butthole? The asterisk.
That's
what if we just
thing?
Make it an X? It's not a full asterisk. It's just an X.
Right. A plus sign. Can we
get
away with that?
Can it be a slit? Oh, no. That's even worse. That gets you MA. That gets you taken off the air if you have it a slit. So, but you can have the buns. You can have them being gelatinous. You can have them making the noise. You just can't. You can't have the butthole there.
Yeah.
There was the other kind of reference is when Tiny Rick is showing his art that's actually a drawing of the character Doc from the inspiration of Rick and Morty, the real animated adventures of Doc and Marty, which is a parody of Back to the Future that Justin Roiland did a long time ago. I don't think I've ever linked that, so I'll link that in the show notes because it's something else. Have you seen it?
Yeah.
It's just 7 minutes of Doc scheming to get Marty to lick his balls.
And much more poorly drawn than this is.
Yes. Yes. It's essentially the animated version of this sketch.
Yeah.
Also, I like to, because like, a lot of times Justin does like this last minute like statement right before the credits cut him off. Mm-hmm. And this one was, keep slogging through these while you work. And I'm like, thanks, Justin. Mm-hmm. I will.
I like the pep talk. Slogging through these as your work.
Yeah.
If you're me.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, thanks. I appreciate that word from the creators. Uh-huh.
Pickle Me This is distributed by Bald Move in association with Starburns Audio. It's produced by Jason Smith and Scott Porch from Starburns and myself, Ben Aaron from Bald Move. All music featured on this podcast is from the Rick and Morty soundtrack, available from Sub Pop Records. Please subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. To discover the many other great shows we do, please check out baldmove.com and starburns.audio. If you appreciate what we do and want to directly support us, consider joining our club at club.baldmove.com to get access to exclusive bonus audio and video features. Finally, you can follow us on your favorite social media at baldmove. See you next time.
No! Nobody's doing that!